On the tee, Jack Nicklaus.
This is the minute that millions around the world have waited for.
We will allow you to enjoy all of this. They are dancing in the pubs of Dublin. Harrington with an ace.
And we have a shining star at sunset. Rory continues his run to greatness.
The return to glory.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Bogeyman Golf Podcast hosted by Michael and Johnny. Riviera, did it live up to the hype? I'm not really sure. We had a good winner. We had a really good winner, but a lot of the big names kind of dropped out. It wasn't the week I hoped it was. I'll put it that way. What about you, Michael? Riviera, yay or nay?
Yeah, like I just think it didn't really live up to the billing I was hoping for. Like I was really excited for it with just the course, Riviera, and the fact it's kind of, like I said to you, it's kind of like old school Frank Sinatra, old school golf. Like it's just the kind of, you're going to flashback to Mr. Palmer and yeah, the old school classics. And that's what Riviera was kind of screams to me. And I was hoping to have all the big boys up there. And it just, I think Matsuyama saved us. It was, but yeah, flat out, yeah, you know, didn't really kind of live up to where it should be, I think.
Yeah, I like that comparison you're talking about, like the identity of the tournament being like old school Hollywood, like 1960s, 70s vibe of like golden age Hollywood. And that's what Riviera really kind of has been. I think I miss John Rahm, if I'm completely honest with you. It like the PGA Tour is missing, not just his play and like him kind of always being on the top of the leaderboard, but just he's fiery. He always has something to say. He'll always can bring a bit of fireworks, and I think we're missing that now, to be honest with you. It's not the same without John Rahm.
Yeah, I also think if the rest of the big hitters were playing really well and were up the list, I don't think we'd have missed them as much. But it just kind of going down the leaderboard, you're like, I always find it funny when you got the leaderboard in the corner there of when you're watching, and even if like eight lads are on the same shot, they'll just put a big lad to the top of that list. So it'd make leaderboard a little bit better.
Yeah. And
just looking down the leaderboard, it was like, oh, really? No one can really sink your teeth into to be like, yeah, okay, I really want to watch him. Like I think I said I was really hoping Xander was going to have a really good day and he was going to take it off Cantley. But again, I was kind of forcing that. I'm not I like Xander, I like Shoffley, but I'm not, he's not a Brooks, he's not a DJ, he's not a Ram, he's not a Rory. You know, it's, I was just kind of hoping for something and just please God not let Cantley win. I think it was literally anyone but Cantley. I can't stand Cantley.
Yeah, you know, I agree with that. I'm not a Cantley fan. I think the Ryder Cup thing kind of just doubled down on that. I wasn't a fan of him before what happened. But unlike Patrick Reed, where he was always like a villain and he played into that villain role, I feel like Patrick Cantley just kind of skirts it. I think if you're to go in to be that character and be, you know, just be completely honest with who you are, and if you're a bit of a villain or you're just in it for the money or whatever, just play that role. Whereas I don't think he goes all in on being a bad guy. And I think that the tour needs, like, we need good guys, we need bad guys, you know? Xander Schauffele and Cantley going out in the final group, we know they're really good mates. We know that their personality-wise very, very similar. So if it was just like a head-to-head between the two of them for 18 holes, that would have been really, really boring to watch. You need someone to kind of come out of nowhere, which is what Hideki did, thank God. But I think the tour is a bigger identity crisis problem where we just, like, everyone's a good guy, and that sucks. Whereas if you look at Liv, like, everyone's competitive by nature, and you have Patrick Reed, who, to be fair, has now gone silent. He doesn't say anything ridiculous anymore. But, like, even, like, Bryson, to a lesser extent, was a divisive figure. So there was always people on the PGA Tour who loved him and people who hated him. So if he was in the mix, there's always some drama there, whether you're rooting for him or rooting against him. Whereas now I feel like we're just not rooting for anyone, which that's the worst outcome entirely.
Yeah, I guess it's a really valid point. Like, I think even as it with Brooks, people out there are like, I like Brooks, yeah, even in all his stupid stuff he says, and something I think he shoots his mouth off without thinking. But I'm like, It's and even Phil, like Phil would be another one where you can, and even I think as you said with Patrick Reed, you can kind of enjoy not liking him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Where even if he's running up a leaderboard, you're kind of like, oh, this is going to be interesting. I really don't want him to win because I don't really like him, but something's going to happen. And then I think you kind of have respect for Patrick Reed when he had that Ryder Cup thing with Rory with judging. Well, with Cantlay, I'm just like, I just don't want to watch you. I don't want to see you at all. I really dislike him. And
It's
yeah,
kind of
like.
like I was at the Ireland Italy rugby match, Six Nations match, and it was just such a hammering from Ireland that by the time you're into the second half, you're like, okay, this is gonna be a really boring match. There's no competition. You kind of want like a villain or someone that you don't necessarily root for to come in to make it a competition. That's why like I find like other sporting matches when they're really tight and there's loads of goals or loads of tries or whatever it is, you're like, this is a great match, especially if you don't have anything invested in it. Like I watched the Wales England rugby match, the Wales Scotland match, in the rugby, and they're both really close, really dramatic, because you're like, this is just great entertainment, and the PGA Tour is just lacking that entirely. It's just people are playing well, but there's never anyone that you don't want to be at the top of the leaderboard, or someone that you do want to be making a run up and giving it a go. Now, I mean, if you're Japanese, you'd probably be like, this is great. What a week. He came out of nowhere, shot 9 under, which is what we do whenever Rory's making a run or he's in the hunt. But we need some people to just turn around and just be a bit more of a bollocks, or just say something to just create a bit of drama. Even if the WWE'd it up a little bit and had, Hovland say this about that person, or have Scotty turn around after Rory made his comments about putting to be like, Rory can fuck off, he was putting like shit 3 years ago, or whatever. Just to make it entertaining for us at home.
But I think another problem is like it was, I think it deflated the tournament. We'll probably get onto it with Tiger and Jordan, deflated it massively. But then McIlroy was poor, Homa was poor, JT was horrendous, Morikawa was non-existent. Like the only thing was Scheffler was throwing his golf ball into the woods. And like again, we're talking about the same problem again with his putting. Hovland, God knows what's going on in his head. So like there's a list of lads that. Surely, normally you wouldn't have all of them a bit all over the shop, which obviously does not bode well moving into, the Masters that little bit away as well, kind of coming into it. So, what did you make of the whole Spieth thing though? Like, I think I've listened to so many people now signing for the wrong. So apparently, what I've learned is that he had four down, he made it three, four is on the card. He just signed it and he left the scoring area. So it was too late to go back and fix it. Like, first of all, like, what's your opinion on pros keeping score? Like, we were very lucky. Like, it was very cool when we were at the Legends Tour. We got to play two of the days, and we actually got to go into the scoring kind of hut and we'll see how it's happened. And we were swapping our cards with the pros. And it was like, for me, for like, because like, that was really cool. Because it was to see what they actually do on tour, which is really cool. But what's your whole thinking behind like the? A lot of people are saying, why are the pros even keeping a scorecard?
Yeah, I think it's easy to say for I heard that argument as well. I think it's easy to say if it's like the if it's like a signature event or a major, but like where like the Kenya Open now at the DP World Tour, like they're not going to be scorers with every group. There aren't going to be cameras with every group. So like the onus has to fall on someone to keep your score. And like obviously we played Arklow and we want to chat about that a little bit. We were both keeping score for the for our games, just for like the crack. We weren't playing a match or anything. But it's like someone has to keep score, and at the end of the day, it is a sport. I'm sure. Obviously, if you look at like football, there's like a scoreboard that's managed by someone else. But like every player playing in that football pitch knows the score, and they're keeping track of the score at the same time. So I would look at it the same way, where like the golfer is keeping track of the score as well. And yeah, look, that's the rule. So you sign your scorecard, you leave the area. That's it. DQ, I think, is tough.
So yeah, I was about to say because
I
obviously
think DQ's tough.
it screwed you and our bet because you had Spieth and I text you. So I woke up and I saw Spieth as the top of them and I just texted like I can't believe JT's gonna miss the cut and Jordan is running away with it. Like
I was sickened. But I think DQ's tough, but the rules are the rules. I think if you're going to change rules, there are way more stupid rules to get rid of first in golf. Like hitting out of divots in the fairway, that's just completely fucking pointless in my mind.
Like
But
what
when it
annoys
comes to,
me, what really annoys me about this is the fact that he's like left the scoring zone. Like That to me, I've no problem. You sign your scorecard, the rules be the same, we're all accepted on it. But he leaving the score, and when one of the scorers goes, oh, there's a mistake here. Oh no, he left the scoring zone. We can't alter it now. Well, why does a guy sign his scorecard? And this has happened. He signed a scorecard and he's whatever. And someone has texted in or emailed in or called into the PGA and be like, actually, I saw on video his coin moved. Oh, well, then they go back and minus him 2 points. Well, if it's a signed scorecard, score's done. End of story. But then no one can come after it and go, oh, there's been something on TV. It's either once the scorecard is signed, everything's locked in, nothing can change. Or it can change because people ring it. So, like, to me, there's like that. There's a rule, and they just decided against it because Joe Soap, who sat home and watched 24 hours of golf, realized that Max Homa moved his marker a yard to the right by accident, and now he's a two. Like, to me, that annoyed me when they were like, no, he's left the scoring. Come on, I think we all know the rules. And like we've all played that really annoyed me because yeah, there's rules, but then they changed their mind. The same thing I've said before. We had Dan Fratelli on the pod. He turned and he asked the rules official, can I do this? They went, yes. He played it, goes through, signs the scorecard. A couple of hours later, he's at his hotel and he gets a message going, oh yeah, we've looked at that and that's actually wrong and there's a two-shot penalty.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of crap. I think there's a few things in there. I think the people texting in or calling in and being like, oh, I saw this in the broadcast and your man was wrong. That obviously shouldn't be allowed to happen. Could you imagine someone calling up the Premier League in the football and be like, oh, well, actually, the VAR was wrong there, so you're going to reverse that goal. Like, come on, this is a real sport. You can't be doing that. That's a load of shite. So, yeah, I think if you're going to have Jordan Spieth leaves the scoring area, scorecard signed, that's the end of it. I think that's the end of it for everything, including the Dylan Fratelli thing. I think the Dylan Fratelli thing is double. Like, we're going back a while, but the Dylan Fratelli thing is like a double screw up on people's parts. A, he asked the rules official. The rules official gave the ruling. Same way in any other sport.
Yeah, and we can debate it afterwards. Yeah, debate it afterwards, no problem.
But if the referee or the rules official makes a call, then that is the call for the round. And that can't be over. That shouldn't be able to be overruled by someone else at a later date, especially after Dylan finished his round, got back to his hotel room and got notified. So yeah, I think when you get like a ruling, an official ruling, that should just be the end of it, and there shouldn't be like an overruling from someone else. But
like when Jordan signed his scorecard and went wherever, like he wasn't that far away. Easy could go, there's been an issue here with Jordan with your scorecard. We've had a look into it. Can you come back down and we'll sort this out?
I think if you leave the scoring hut, you leave the scoring hut, and that's the end.
I think that's harsh because I think we've been at tournaments. There's a lot of stuff going on. People are knocking around. I think,
but you don't have to go directly. Like, you can go into the score. So obviously, there's been the whole thing about people getting flus, and Tiger got the flu, and apparently, people have been getting diarrhea like nobody's business at Riviera. Like, loads of people getting, and that's the reason that Jordan apparently left fast was like he signed his card and then just legged it.
Yeah,
he could have left his scorecard in there, not signed it, gone off taking a shit, and then come back and signed it. So it's just leaving the scoring hut after having signed it was the issue, not actually like leaving the hut or not leaving the scoring area. So like that was just a bunch of mistakes made by him. And that's just, I think that's on him more than on
anyone. I'm not taking this that, oh, people had bets and there's gambling and people came to see him.
I had a bet on him and I'm like the most, that happened. Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Like you can't, that's not reasons for sport. Like that's, you can't say that. Like, oh, well, kids have paid to see Jordan's, well, tough. JT made the cut, so you pay to see, like that's just the way it is. But I was gut wrenched when Tiger withdrew.
Yeah, I saw the first thing I saw from that was actually someone put a Twitter photo of Tiger with his head in his hands, and I was like, "Oh my fuck!" I was like, "Has he done? Did he fall? Has something bad happened?" And even when people were like, "Oh no, it's not his body," I was like, "It has to be his body." Like,
but he didn't look great walking around, and I'm like, "Is he walking?" Because I watched.
You've changed your tune now in the last week. Tiger's gonna win again. He's definitely gonna win.
I think, but like, he can still play ball. Like, he birdied the first, and he can still hit it. He can still drive it. His game didn't look that bad. But
he's
now,
like 54th out of 70 people.
No, I know, but I didn't think his game was like outrageously bad. I think he just wasn't that sharp. I mean, now my worry is, I still think he can win again, but I wonder, can he even finish a tournament?
Yeah.
Like, I think out of his last, I think it's his last five tournaments, he's only finished, I know it's over a couple of years, he's only finished one.
Yeah, I would
He's
also
focused.
say, okay, like I'm sure he has this flu and whatever. The cynic in me would also go, all right, I'm Tiger Woods. I don't want a miscut on my record, like another one. Maybe less this WD here, save a bit of face. We'll be all right.
I don't know, like there was apparently was like, he was on an IV drip and there was like, was it a medic car and a fire brigade turned up because
Yeah,
he
an
had
ambulance and stuff. Ah, look.
like it was I just I like apparently Cantlay had one of this and you said Jordan as well, but it's just I thought he was okay. I thought it would have been good reps for him. It just it made this the whole turn just a little bit flat. I think
Yeah.
you lose Jordan, you lose Tiger, and it's kind of put a shadow on it.
I think it was really flat because we also just didn't see him then afterwards. Because usually if he's like at this, he'd be in the booth afterwards. Like even the year that he had that car crash, remember he went into the booth and he looked horrendous. Like that was before the accident and he looked in a really bad way. And we didn't see him again after that. Obviously he had this like so he has this flu and he's just like, I need to recover and that side of things, which is completely fair, obviously. If I was sick, I would do the same thing. But it did mean that the host of the tournament wasn't there and it was flat and like because even when in like with Jack when it's when it's his tournament and he's hosting, he's in the booth, he's there at the 18th green. There's the whole formality around like meeting the host and shaking his hand and getting the photos. And Hideki even said he was like, oh yeah, it was disappointing not to get the photo with Tiger.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
And there's so much, it seems like there's so much less to play for when that presence isn't there at his own tournament. And that sucks.
If I'm Hideki, I'm winning a Tiger as well. I'm going straight to his clubhouse or his house for that photo with the trophy.
Yeah,
That's
absolutely.
I'd be knocking on Tiger's door. Tiger, you didn't get the photo with me. Thank you. I need this.
Yeah. How long before? So, like, we spoke about this. We're texting back and forth. Tiger's getting on. I mean, like, he's not old, but he's getting on, right? He's what, 47, 48 now. Guys are starting to tour younger and younger and younger. How long before someone comes out and starts calling Tiger Mr. Woods in the same way they have, like, oh, Mr. Nicholas, and or even like
Mr.
the media
Palmer.
start doing it and they start like aging Tiger up that way because he's gonna start playing now a lot more and he's gonna be more of that, like. Father figure. I think it'll be weird if someone starts going out and going, yeah, like I just always loved watching Mr. Woods.
Yeah, I don't think it's, I'm not sure if it's ever going to happen with him because it's Tiger. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I think because we never call him Woods. You just say Tiger and everyone say a second name. It's kind of like Bubba. Like he'll never be, it was just always going to be Bubba.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. I think this Sunday Red thing as well, I think it's a change from the Nike. Is he, even in himself, is he leaving this high performance killer Michael Jordan Nike athlete to this is me now? I'm Sunday Red and it's sunshine and I'm done. Like, I'm wondering in his mind because. I doubt he like I think Nike would have kept sponsoring him forever if they wanted. I don't think there was an issue with that. It seemed to be like he wanted to leave for this. And I'm wondering, is it in his own head he goes, right, I'm actually going to leave Nike and I'm going to start this second part of my life where I'm not killer, killer, killer,
Yeah.
and be the more, how many times
Realistic.
did Jack retire? He kept coming back and playing the Open. The sort of thing is. Is Tiger going to be kind of be doing that and floating around that sort of thing? I don't know. It's a really interesting kind of look at it as
What role he kind of moves into now.
what does he want? Because a part of me would be like he might, there's a part of me thinking Tiger would just leave golf and then never come back and wouldn't commentate, wouldn't be involved at all. Now I'm kind of like, is there something in him where he'd like, would he love to be a Ryder Cup captain?
Oh, yeah.
With his lads, as in like his the guys he likes, he might be like, I want full 12 picks, and would he actually enjoy that? Whereas when he was just a killer, I don't think he really cared. Now he's looking at going, geez, I could use something. So I don't know. I think this the new clothes thing is a new kind of way he's gonna change himself, maybe. But I will never call him Mr. Woods. He'll always be
Yeah.
Tiger.
Yeah, I think the same. I don't think anyone's ever going to turn around and call him Mr. Woods because the word and the name Tiger is just synonymous with him. It's like he's a one word person, one name person.
But like this is like my son watched a bit of the golf tournament because Tiger was there. Now he watched maybe 5, 6 minutes or whatever. It was to watch Tiger. So he still pulls in that side. Now, my son is like Ricky Fowler, and Ricky wasn't, which I don't know what the story is with Fowler, but you know, I think that's more because he's just kind of cool looking.
Where's Tricky Ricky?
That's it, Tricky Ricky.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I think it's a pity that we're not gonna get to see much of Tiger on the golf course ever again. Like this for me, like obviously I was very obviously I was very kind of skeptical even before this week began that how much we're gonna see him play, and this week just again kind of hammered home that anything can knock Tiger for six
Yeah.
in a big way. Like doesn't have to be anything like crazy heat, like what he had in Augusta with like the year he won, or insane cold at the Open. Like it seems that like any small thing can really knock Tiger now,
Yeah, and I
physically
don't.
or health wise.
Yeah,
He seems like he's very frail.
I really don't think he looks great. He didn't like you kind of in. He just didn't look great. He look even he gingerly walking. I still think now his swing is still really nice. I'd stand behind him on the driving range all day. Like, you know, he still has that beautiful swing, which is crazy when you think of how his back is so fused. But it could be. I'm very interested to see what he how he goes at the Masters now, and if he can finish it. I think what he needs to do is just, I don't know, with regards to his body, but maybe not do this mad practice days he used to, and just walk Augusta with a putter and his caddy beforehand, and then just play on Thursday.
Does
You
he
know.
even need to do that anymore? I mean, he's Tiger Woods. He is perfect for Augusta. Does he actually, surely he has muscle memory to go, this is how I get around this place. He'd have to.
Yeah, he does. But to go from I'm presuming like every time he's gone to the Masters and he's had his mad regime of how many practice rounds he plays, and to go from all that to nothing might be a great idea. But maybe walk the front nine with a putter, and just walk it, then just putt for a couple of bits, and then maybe walk the back nine the next day, just with a wedge, and just you know approach and just a few little chips here and there and that, and then go for then play Thursday would be what I would kind of. Hope he gets in and keep his energy.
Do they will see him before the Masters?
Mean, I think he might play a play. He might do the players. You know, if he wants to, if he still, if inside him he thinks he can still win, you know, and he just needs a run, right? And from all accounts, he probably still thinks he can win. He needs a tournament. He needs a scorecard in his hand. He needs to play 4 days in tournament conditions. So maybe the players. And I think playing maybe anything else. Riviera was a good one because it was very major conditions. You know, I think we'll get another Rory in the booth said that as well. So I think maybe the players is the next best thing. I'd like to see him with the players.
Yeah, it'd be nice like either the players or Arnold Palmer. Arnold Palmer's another signature event, so maybe this is a case of him being like, right, no cut event, four rounds, get that in that
Yeah.
way.
Yeah, that's actually yeah,
But
that's a good shout.
sure. It's so hard to know because with Tiger, obviously he keeps everything so close to his chest that it's just we're never gonna know. Okay, I think we've spoken long enough about Riviera without actually talking about the fact that Hideki Matsuyama won.
Yeah.
I think obviously starting from where you did, what, six shots back, you said this already, he kind of saved the day from what otherwise would have been a really, really boring Sunday. Cantlay win would have probably been the worst thing possible. Zalatoris win would have been pretty good. Just from the story that he has in terms of he obviously got spinal fusion or like a spinal surgery on like a slipped disc or a disc in his back a few months ago that properly went, and he got surgery on that. And then he had about 6 months, 7 months of rehab, and it's only his what, third or fourth start. I think Zalatoris would have been a good winner, but I much prefer Hideki. You're not a Zalatoris fan, which I think is just wild.
Yeah, I just don't really get it. He gets so much love. I don't really see it, to be honest. He's grand. Like he's no Fleetwood or you know, he's no Homa. I think there's a bit more to those lads. I just think he's a bit vanilla, to be honest. So I don't know why he's getting so much love. Like, listen, the putting woes are incredible. Man, I get that, and I feel sorry for him. Going to the broom looks to be pretty good, and that's a good story in itself.
Yeah, his putting stroke looks a lot better now. As I say, his putting stroke looks really tidy.
Yeah, it does. And I know, you know, he said he had a family member pass away pretty close to him, and like that was quite emotional for him. But I don't know. I'm not in love with him as seems as much everyone loves him. He's grand, like.
I think it's pretty cool that Happy Gilmore's caddy is now playing on the PGA Tour. I think that's just insane.
It's true.
But yeah, listen, back to Matsuyama. I think what this is the what second win in 2 years since Sony. Even if he didn't win, this would have been his first top 10 in over a year, which is just like insane. He dropped out of the top 50 into like the top 60 in the world. But I have this theory, and I'm not sure how half-baked it is, but I looked into it a little bit, right?
Okay.
So we've been talking about Tiger's Sunday Red and that brand, where that came from, and the fact that like every single Sunday since Tiger was like 16, 17, 18, whatever it was, he's worn red. And that's what he's worn in his final round. There aren't really any other players who we can associate a color to. Like Gary Player always wore black and he was called the Black Knight. But like Rory doesn't have like a color, we'll call it.
Yeah.
JT doesn't, Jordan doesn't. Phil maybe wore a little bit of black, but like they didn't have an iconic color that you would associate with them. But Hideki Matsuyama actually is. Like he's the only other player that wears Sunday yellow every single time. And so I was like, okay, like this is kind of interesting. I'm not really sure why he does that. Is that like a Japanese thing, or is it just like he just loves the color yellow? It turns out, even though he doesn't speak much English, yes, he loves the color yellow. It's his favorite color. But
Okay.
I feel like there's got to be more to the yellow, because it's not a good looking color. Like yellow is not a great looking color to wear. You don't see anyone
Yeah,
else
it's
wearing
not
it apart
great.
from him. So I looked into, did a little bit of research this morning to like just Japanese culture and like the meaning behind the color yellow. And this is what I found. So in Japan, the color yellow is often associated with the sun, happiness, energy. The color is also used to represent the country's iconic Mount Fuji. But yellow is a very important color in Japanese culture and has a long history dating back to ancient times and their old royal family. Yellow is also associated with happiness and good fortune. Japanese word for yellow is ki, which also means happiness, and yellow is said to bring good luck. So I think in a time where we're talking about like Cantlay, Jordan, all kind of being very bland, vanilla, the Zalatoris and the likes of them, Hideki's standing out for the right reason. Like he's standing out as a nice guy, but there's a bit more to him, and like he obviously doesn't speak much English, but there's like an association there with him that if you see him on, like I'm sure if you're a Japanese fan and you're watching Hideki pay off and you see him in that like their iconic yellow, you must get a bit of a buzz, you must get a bit of a kick out of it. And I think that's cool. I think that having that visual representation, I think goes back to us liking like jerseys and colors and stuff like that in other sports. I think having like him wearing that yellow, and whether it's for superstition or just because he loves the color yellow, I think it's cool to see him just wearing that every week in, week out. And yeah, for me, I was like, let's keep that going. Let's keep that Sunday yellow going for Hideki.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I hadn't really kind of looked into that. And maybe the Shinto religion as well, we kind of big within the forces and energy and stuff. So I'm sure that all kind of links in together. And like he's the most decorated Japanese player in the PGA Tour now.
Yeah, like 8 wins, 9 wins. Is this his 9th win or
Yeah.
something?
And I think like that's nearly Hall of Fame stuff. So I think from he's de like and he is a star. I was delighted when he won. And man, I love watching him because when you see him hit a shot, you've no idea how good it is or how bad it is in his face. And then it's like he might scrunch up and like you're like, oh, he doesn't like it. And then it's like 5, 6 inches from the hole. You're like,
Yeah.
is he not like it? What are you talking about? So I think he's a really cool player. I think the yellow. So that's instead of the Tiger Red, we've got
We've got
the
Sunday yellow.
Matsuyama. Yeah, Sunday yellow. I
Yeah,
like
I
it.
like that. And like, he seems like a very nice guy. You know, he's always very quietly spoken. I was actually like looking into him, and in 2017, no one in the US media knew he had a wife at all. And then they asked him a question, and he was like, oh yeah, well like I just had my first child there the other week. And they're like, you what? Like you have a kid? And they're like, are you married? And he's like, yeah. He's like, they're like, why didn't you ever tell us this? He goes, well, you never asked, so I just never said. And I just like that kind of, it's obviously like Japanese culture to be very humble and understated, but that is just a very likable trait in someone like him. And I think for every one that we have of him, to make this entertaining, I think we do need someone on the complete opposite end of that spectrum to make it entertaining. If everyone was like Hideki and very quiet and personable, it would be a very boring place. But we do need some people like him, which are good to watch and just interesting people. Because I'm sure there's a lot more to him than he's letting on.
Yeah, his caddy is cool. I like his caddy. So he was like, I think in the Masters he bowed, but did you see the picture of him sitting on the hill watching the other groups come in? So after Hideki finished, obviously he wasn't in the last group. So his caddy was sitting there, and I'm pretty sure he was just vaping, sitting on this hill watching the other groups come in, just chilling out. Like, I was like, I love that. Like,
yeah, obviously, like, the golf sicko, but he must be watching them being like, we have made so much money today. Well, 4 million quid, first place prize fund. Your man making 10%, that's 400 grand. What a week. Jesus. Yeah, it was good. One other big takeaway, Rory going into the booth.
Yeah, I like that.
What was the best part? I think that was probably the best part of Rory's week, to be honest.
Yeah, I think, yeah, the whole week was Rory in the booth. I just loved his... He spoke really honestly and candidly when, like, they tried and asked, he would talk about Scheffler and his putting. And Rory was like, yeah, like, I struggled. He's like, it's a real big thing. He's like, you know, if Scotty's just moved to a mallet. And it was just something so simple to say. And, like, obviously I use a mallet. You don't use a mallet. I don't know how anyone puts with
the blade.
The blade. I don't know how you get your stroke. It's madness. So I don't know if that would make a difference. I'm no expert. I'm a terrible putter. But it looks like Scotty needs to do something. And I think with a mallet, it just simplifies everything. Your stroke is straight back and through. It's easier to keep it online. You know, I think it helps with, like, your speed and stuff. So,
well, so we got the new Odyssey AI one putters, right? So I got the new AI one model number two. So it is a blade putter. You got the milled face in like the model seven. What is it that's helped your putting then from that side?
Like, well, the first thing is I've always liked mallets. I think they suit my eye. I used to love watching DJ and stuff with the big mallets, but it was just, I think it's easier to keep things straight. There's a line on it that helps me kind of just keep everything in line and straight through it. But I think the biggest thing for me is the face on that Odyssey putter. The ball just comes out way better than it's ever come out before. It gives it a truer roll. And I'm holding putts that I've never held before. Which, like, and even we played Narclo, and I drained some putts, and even you were like, geez, I've never seen you hole swing from that distance.
You were holding putts that you were leaving 3 or 4 foot short beforehand. You're definitely not leaving them short anymore.
Yeah, and but even on, like, pace wise, it's helped me massively. So I think it was just interesting. Like, I know, and then Roy said, geez, and then at the end of it, he was kind of, geez, if he does take a mallet and makes a difference, we're kind of screwed because he's so good. But it was
that's true.
It's just nice to have someone in the booth that's playing that weekend. And, like, as he, like, you don't really, it's something that he said as well. He was like, if you're out of position on this course, you're in serious trouble. And it's only when you kind of, it's all grand listening to the guys in the booth say that, or the commentators, oh, we'll have a tough chip from there or whatever. Rory's out there trying to compete and trying to play. And he's coming back in with firsthand knowledge of what's actually happening. Mm-hmm. And if they could get more of those lads in, you know, and I don't know, like, with the lads at the PGA Tour board or whatever, because I know the lads have, like, it's up on the onus to the players as well to grow this PGA Tour, because it's their tour and they're in charge. Well, then just
especially now that they're going to get equity.
Yeah, well, just make a rule. If you miss the cut or whatever, you have a group of lads and go, listen, I want you into the booth for however long. If you miss the cut, you stay 15, 20 minutes. If whatever, you know, if you're in the hunt, that's one thing. But if you're 20th, come in and just chat about it and watch a hole or two and go out again. I think it would make, like, I think no one talked about anything the commentary said all week, and then Rory was in there and we got about 4 or 5 little nuggets out of it.
How good would it be if you're dead right, you have guys who missed the cut, but they do the on-course reporting?
Like,
you have someone who's like, I missed here on Thursday, I was completely boned. This is what he needs to do. And then you have actually first-hand experience. Like you were saying there a second ago, you have guys who are actually competing in the field, but, like, someone who's missed in that spot and was like, this is really hard to pin position for that because I was there earlier. I couldn't get to that. This is what I struggled with. This is what he needs to focus on. That would be great. Rather than, like, the on-course reporters are very good. Don't get me wrong. I think, especially from the Sky Sports side, very, very good. But I think you did have like it just feels a bit more official, or like you can kind of trust what they're saying a little bit more if it's actually been a guy who was playing in the field.
Yeah, and they're also not polished. They're just honest. Like if like imagine if JT got into the booth for two holes on Sunday. I was like, I really struggled with these greens this week. Like, it was like, you could be like, listen, hands up, my game is a bit all over the shop, but I really struggled in these greens. Like, this is a really tough putt. Even though it's 6 foot, we have it on TV. If JT was like, I'm struggled on these greens this week, this is a really tough putt. And then Hideki makes
Yeah,
it, you know, whoa,
here's why. Yeah.
this is what, or, you know, they're really hard to read. Even it doesn't have to go into too much detail, but just they're so quick when they don't look quick, or you know, uphill putts on the on this week have actually been really tricky. And you're kind of going, oh, okay, that's really, really good. And I don't know, and I think it, the fact it's, I think that they have to do something a little bit more than what it has been because of the live stuff. But also, if it's their tour and they're on the board, they're involved. Like I know they did the chat to them where they walked the hole. It was good, but I don't want to, I don't want to do something that looks gimmicky that messes up when they're actually playing. But we can't have as these standard, oh, it was real tough out there and I left a few putts out there. There was no point in interviewing if they're going to talk like that. Like
Yeah.
there's 0 point. I don't want to hear it's like, oh, it was some negatives, but we'll take the positives and we'll go away and work on them. Gosh, I'm bored. Like we've all heard it a million times. But I thought the Rory thing was good, and I think it's definitely something they should definitely kind of look into and see if they can expand it. Like I know the DP World Tour have that kind of, it's like a confession box. Like
Yeah.
when they go in and let the lads just rant and talk whatever they want. I'm not saying do that as well, but just it's something just that we have something a little bit different.
Yeah, but even then, like this guy, sports guys, they had so last week they had Dino Fratelli in 2 of the days, just on in the booth and commentary for like a half an hour each day. I mean, like it's not a huge amount of time out of his week. He'd made the cut, but wasn't playing, like wasn't in contention. So he was
Yeah.
there. He was out
Perfect.
teeing off early in the morning, so that he did that, and then went and just did the commentary for half an hour. Now half an hour is nothing to those guys. Do that, it adds to the product so much. It just makes it so much better.
Yeah, massively. Just lastly on this, I am so annoyed at Xander Schauffele.
Why?
Like, I think he's got no balls. I like, he, I just, you know what I mean? Go and do like the picture. I like him. The picture of him with a cigar at the Ryder Cup. I'm like, I can't buy into this fella. Lovely swing. And you're like, when are you actually going to play? Like, he bottled that. I can't believe he bottled it. I'm glad he bottled it, Grant. But Xander put up no fight at all, and I'm like, what is the point in you? What,
Yeah.
why, like, what? He's, I just like, when was this? His last one was probably like, it's like, I remember the last one I remember was the Scottish Open. He won. Like, there could have been one or two in there, but like, I'm just like, what are you gonna do something and just go and win something? Or at least like, he didn't even put up a fight. If he had even tried and he dunked one in the water, or you know, bogeyed something, but at least he pushed. What is the point in not pushing? What is the point in not trying? It's like he's like he was happy just to plod along, or I don't know, did he just get scared or something? But he just, it was so deflating, so disappointing. And he's someone I kind of like watching because he's got a lovely swing, but it's like you see him up a leaderboard, you're like, you're not going to do anything. You're gonna, like, there's no
Yeah.
like, and you cross that someone like Tommy Fleetwood, who, every time you watch Tommy, I know he hasn't won on the PGA Tour, and it's a stick to beat him with. But you can see he is going for it. He is trying. He is
Yeah.
trying to work it. And you're going, okay, I'm happily on the journey with you to watch this. Xander doesn't. It's just nothing. And you know, I think he needs to give himself a kick in the arse. Get going.
Yeah. It felt like he and Cantley were kind of checked out on the Sunday, which is like the worst day to be checked out, but
Yeah, completely.
sure, there you go. It's overall, I think the big names have not been delivering the drama, like McIlroy, Max Homa, Spieth. With the I think Spieth is a different one, to be honest with you. I don't think we can lump him in with everyone else because he was top of the
Yeah,
leaderboard.
he was playing
he
well.
he just was an idiot. But like JT, Morikawa, Scheffler is another funny one. Like he obviously came off the board at the weekend. If he could putt, he'd be just ridiculous. And then Hovland. So like those guys need to step up. Like it's their tour.
Yeah, they're the
Do
stars.
again, do you want them to be playing? Because we're gonna get into like major predictions now. Do we want them to be playing lights out golf in February? Or do we want to be playing lights out golf from April onwards? You know? Like let's just talk from the Rory perspective. Like it's 10 years now since he's won a major. Like, do we want him to have a 6 week stretch from January to March of playing unbelievable golf? And then he'd be playing the way he is now from April, May, and for two majors? Absolutely not. I'd much rather, okay, signs of life over the next few weeks would be great. A couple of top tens in the next couple of weeks would be ideal. I'd like to see that from him, but I would much rather he's kind of playing poorly now. But like, because remember, we've got a major a month from like April, May, June, July. So if he's if he's playing well over that 4 month stretch, I don't really give a shit what he does in January, February.
No, I like, yeah, okay, and like, and he's got a win already. And like, McIlroy doesn't really worry me. I think he'll be thereabouts. Homa worries me. Thomas worries me. Morikawa worries me. Scheffler worries me. Hovland, it to me is mind-boggling what's happened there. And I know he's you're one of, like, you're a big Hovland fan. You know more about kind of what he's going through. You've read a bit more on it, but it's like, lads, like, you are the stars of this, and your old game is kind of nearly deserting you. Well, like, okay, Scheffler could be an easy fix. If Scheffler fixed something, he like next in 2 weeks, he could win all four majors, right? So,
For
for
sure.
example, let's say he do goes to the claw or to the broom, and that fixes his putting. You could you'd be very you know he could win all four majors. Morikawa has been kind of flat. Thomas seemed to have signs of life, and that's why I picked him going into this week. And then he was. And I don't know where he turns to now, to be honest, because it's just
Well,
everything's just kind of bleh, bleh, bleh. Every part of his game is just bleh, bleh,
that's a technical term for it there.
bleh. Yeah. Like, if I'm Thomas, I'm ringing up my coach. I'm like, I'm just bleh, bleh, bleh. Like, I don't know what to, because
You mentioned his coach. His coach is his dad. And that's a tough relationship because, like, it's clearly been a long time now where things haven't been working. Like, you've tried this, you've tried that. Look like signs of life there in the regular kind of regular field events, but now you're playing against like the best guys or some of the best guys in the world, and you're not getting it done. So there's clearly like a difference between a regular tour event and a signature tour event. Like, do you have that tough conversation with your dad and go, right, I think we need to look a little bit of outside help here. And like that's tough because it's your dad. If it's your any other coach, you'd be like, listen, we've been doing this for a year and a half, 2 years, it's not working. I need a change. You're out, this guy's in. Whereas it's like, I'll see you for dinner on Sunday. It's
you
totally
can argue,
different.
yeah, it's the same thing with Spieth though. And like when Spieth's gone to that, everyone was saying like he should get rid of Greller, and he kept him. So with Thomas, I don't know. Like
Caddy and
he,
coach are so different, though.
I know, but
So
like
different.
he was trying. One stage he tried to hit a fade, and he hooked it. And I'm like, how at this level are you playing the shots that I'm hitting? Like, you're like, I don't want, like, you don't, you know, if something's not quite on or whatever, but he was putting it into the shit. And I was like, but like he at one stage he actually fully came over the top on one of them. And I went, what? I was like, that's it's like watching me. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm going, what is happening? So I don't know. Thomas, because actually I'm a big Thomas fan, and I really hope he gets it together. And I think if Scheffler needs to put Hovland needs to come back from his woes. Okay, Homa Markawa, or Homa's probably been a bit harsh on Homa, because again, he hasn't won a major or whatever, but he just I'm just it's
He
lackluster.
started to step up as like the guy though a little bit. He
Yeah.
obviously played, he was like the shining light from the US Ryder Cup side. He has played very well. He's been up in there in the mix. His major record obviously is horrendous. But yeah, I agree with you. I think this is the year he needs to kind of step up. But let's get into the predictions because we could go through everyone and how they've been disappointing us so far on the PGA Tour, and we don't have that much time.
Yeah, true.
The Masters. I've got Brooks for this. Obviously, he came close last year. He came close in 2019 as well, and then he came close the following year as well. So I like Brooks for the Masters. I think it's hard to know. I'm gonna obviously have to watch more live to see how he's actually playing, but he seems to like Augusta. So
I'm gonna go Rory. I think he's gonna get it's kind of more these are more gonna kind of hope as well. But I think the Augusta suits Rory. I think it's his best chance with some lads not being hot, being on live, and I think His game is actually, like, I don't know this week, but I think his putting seems to have improved. His wedges seem to have improved. He's still driving the ball really well. So I'm gonna go Rory for the Masters to
Yeah.
complete the career Grand Slam.
I will also say I heard that Michael Bannon was out with Rory this week at Riv, so how he performed this week might just be a result of them working on
Tweaking bits.
something.
Yeah,
So,
tweaking little bits and
yeah.
pieces. Yeah. He seems fairly relaxed. I think the fact he went into booth is a good sign that he's a bit more, he's relaxed on his game. And
Yeah.
kind of, he said he's working on a few things. He's kind of happy enough where it is. He's just got to tweak little bits and pieces, which I think is good.
Yeah, I think Rory kind of. There are four events that Rory cares about, and these are the four. I think even the signature events at this point, Rory's kind of checked out of. He's just like, if I win, I'm cool. If I'm in the hunt, I'll go for it. But like, if I'm tied 20th after Saturday, I don't care.
Yeah,
And I kind of respect that, to be honest. PGA Championship is at Valhalla this year. Ironically, we were talking about him. Rory McIlroy won the PGA Championship at Valhalla. But I think if Victor Hovland can kind of get his act together a little bit, this is somewhere that'll suit him very, very nicely.
I think it's going to be a live player. I think it's be like a DJ or a Ram is going to win the PGA Championship. I think. I just
Oof.
have a funny feeling.
That would be so interesting.
I think, yeah, it could be a Brooks, a DJ, a Ram is what I'm kind of feeling for the PGA. I don't know why I have that feeling.
Yeah, very nice. US Open. So we spoke about this before. We had Michael Campbell on the podcast when he won the US Open at Pinehurst last time he was here, like 10, 13 years ago. Yeah, whenever it was. If Scottie Scheffler changes something in the putting, he's going to win the US Open. For me, he's just hitting it too well to not win something, and I think that this is going to be it. If he can just get half decent with the putting,
Like
this is what he'll
yeah,
win.
like and it doesn't have to be a very like he doesn't have to be great for the putter, just mediocre, and I think he'll win because he like it's like 2 weeks in a row he's been pretty much last in the field with his putting, but he's been first on tee to green. So if you put him middle of the pack putting,
Exactly.
I think you kind of spoke about Pinehurst as well because like you've done a little bit of a dive into this, but I think you said it was a real ball strikers kind of golf course, and I'm gonna go with Fleetwood. I think Tommy, I would love to see Tommy win the US Open. I think it would shut up all his critics. I mean, he hasn't won on the PGA Tour, hasn't won on a major. I think he's got so close in majors. I think he's a, and I'd love to watch him. I love watching him in the hunt. I think he's got a great swing. And everything I've kind of, any interviews I've watched with him, he's just an absolute gent. So I think Fleetwood for the US Open is going to be my hope pick.
Did you see that Fleetwood was at Live Vegas?
Yeah, I did. That
That
was
was
interesting.
rogue. I mean, obviously, so he trains with Butch Harmon. Butch also coaches like DJ and like a load of guys and is also based out of Vegas. So I
Yeah.
imagine Tommy was over with Butch in Vegas and then went and stuck his head in. But Jesus, how disappointing would it be if we lost Tommy Fleetwood? I mean, you'd have to start watching Live.
If you, yeah, I think if you lost Tommy, the only one to be left will be Rory. I think they nearly all go then.
Open Championship is at Royal Troon. For me, this is the one that Rory's going to win this year. This is the major. It'll be, yeah, Rory McIlroy to win at Royal Troon.
This is I think it could be Spieth.
Right.
I think I'd love to see the very rogue. I think his game will go up and down, up and down, and I think he might just hit a hot streak, and like he'd be then knocking it onto different courses, the different holes, and chipping back on, and it would absolutely be chaos. But I think his game's in an okay space. Now I think it would still be like, biting fingernail stuff all the way through, and he could have a triple bogey coming in on the 18th with having a 2 shot lead or anything. But it's just, I don't know, I'd love to see Spieth win a major. So I think,
Yeah.
yeah, that I think this is more of a hope because, and I said to you, I felt the majors last year sucked. I felt okay, Ram winning the Masters, but then
Brooks
win.
winning the PGA, I felt was good.
Yeah, but there was a whole live thing. There was a bit of such. We didn't really know what was going on either. I mean, he played really well. Brooks winning that, but then it was such an anticlimax of Wyndham Clark and Brian Harman winning. It's just like, oh, really? I'm still not a fan of both of them. I know Wyndham won the Pebble Beach, and he's Everyone thinks he's the man now, but I'm not a big fan of the two of them. So I'd love to
Yeah, I'm
see.
not buying Wyndham Clark either.
No, I'm not buying it. So I think even some of your picks, I think we can have an unbelievable major season if either of our say if we've got them right, just the players,
Yeah,
and
good
they're all
winners.
different major competitions. I think it would be an unbelievable stretch for the majors.
Yeah, they would be great winners. Did anyone else to jump out to you then from so moving on from that? That's the majors. That's who we think. That's who we hope will win. I can't don't think that's who we think will win. I think that's more of a, like you're saying, a hope side. But before we get into the next segment or the end of the podcast, just a reminder that the Bogeyman podcast is supported by G4 Shoes. They've launched their brand new range of Galavantor shoes. We wore them when we were playing at Arklow the other day. These shoes are like just they're unbelievably comfortable. They're the best golf shoes, like if you want a mix of traditional but also sporty modern style of golf shoe. I have like the old original Galavanter shoes, which are like that traditional classic style. These modern Galavantour shoes are a modern sporty twist on that, completely waterproof, which is good because we were both in the long grass a fair bit in Arklow. Very comfortable. They have like these little bubbly soles on the inside, which when you put your feet into them for the first time, you're like, geez, what's going on here? This is different. This isn't what I usually have. But you get very used to that very quickly. It's very comfortable, really good at kind of keeping your foot in place in the soles. Yeah, it was good. They're great shoes. Go visit g4shoes.co.uk. Their shoes are very, very cool. They're too fashionable for us, to be honest. We are not cool enough to be pulling off these shoes.
Yeah, they're great. Like, I think that the biggest thing for me is, especially if you're playing golf at the moment, like it is still kind of soggy and wet in areas, and there's no like big spice in them, but I didn't slip once when we played in them. And as you said, completely waterproof. And I like them because they're like there's a bit of a traditionalist in me as well, so they're a really nice mix of the kind of JT Homa look while still not really old man shoes. Do you know what I mean? That's which I really love.
Yeah, like I wouldn't ordinarily go for like an old school classic style of shoes. So this is like a nice little mix of that, where it's your classic style but it's got a modern twist. There's a bit of color on the sole. Like I've got like that light blue, baby blue kind of camo, and then like along the sides, and then like this very bright blue on the bottom of the shoes. So whenever you finish your golf swing, if you're behind, you can see this. You get hit by a color of blue, but the bottom of your shoes are like bright pink, and you're just like, whoa, that's a fair bit of color there. It's cool. It's different from like your regular kind of golf shoes. So moving on to David Puig or Puig, what David Puig won the Malaysian Open. It's his second professional victory on the Asian tour. He also obviously moved over to live. He's on was it Sergio's Fireball team? Is that who they're
Yeah,
using?
Sergio's fireballs.
Fireballs, the Spanish team. Or Spanish slash South American team? Because I don't think he's actually Spanish.
Anyone who drinks San Miguel and has had a tequila in their life, I think, can play
That's
for.
the qualifying
That's it.
criteria, is it?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
So he went over to play the Malaysian Open on the Asian tour, and the reason he did that is because there were two or three Open Championships spots on the table.
Yeah,
Himself, Sam Horsfield, and another player, another young guy. I can't remember who it is, but three of them went over and played in the event, and David Puig won it, and he's qualified for the Open Championship. So I think more live guys should just stop bitching and moaning, and just try playing these qualifying events and playing the majors.
The one thing about like they're gone to live, one of the reasons is, oh, we get to play less. Yeah, but then you gotta go to Asia and play as well if you want to get into the majors. So you end up playing just as much, if not more. So can we stop pretending these are the reasons and just say you went for money? Because that's no problem. Like, genuinely have no issue with it. We've said that so many times, but like it's just it must be a trek to have to go onto the Asian tour, like
Flying
especially.
from Vegas as well.
You know, and especially when you've done the hard work to get off the challenge tours and all these other little tours to get into the PGA or the DP World Tour, and then go back and go, geez, we're kind of basically playing nearly a challenge tour style event to get back in just to play in the majors. Like, that's got to be tiring and exhausting. And something that isn't ideal. Like, I know whatever money they've got now, but there's still got to be an absolutely serious drain on their energy and their time, you know? And like, I think with Poulter and Westwood, They've gone and looked at it as a retirement gig, you know, with the young lads, the Tyrrell Hattons. I can, like, I don't know what Tyrrell Hatton's going to do. Well, once his OWR ranking drops that much, I mean, he probably will never get into a major again.
Yeah, and he kind of said as much, didn't he, really? When he did a press conference at Live Vegas, and he said he doesn't know how many more Ryder Cups he has in him. Realistically, is he going to be in that kind of Ryder Cup caliber player unless he has a class major year this year where like maybe he wins one of the majors and there you go, problem solved. But like you've got 54 Live players. You also have 54 Live players competing for four wins for the same thing. Like John Rahm has lifetime membership now for the Masters, and he's going to be in there forever. He's in the other three majors for the next 5 to 10 years. DJ, Patrick Reed are all kind of in that similar type of boat. But Patrick Reed's even coming up to the end of his exemptions for like the US Open, the PGA, and the Open Championship. So, like, if they're your four opportunities to stay in the majors for like next year and going forwards, the competition is almost like, it's way greater for the live guys, which is tough, but that's why you take the money. So just go good, like, yeah.
See, I still
Tough
think
shit. Tough shit. It's just like, that's it.
I still think they're being pushed to say it to try and keep pressure to get market points. And
Yeah.
I think they're being told this is the party line when you can mention it, and we will get ranking points. Like, I think Norman has probably said to them, we will get ranking points, but we're just going to shove it down their throat. And the
Yeah.
more players we get, they're going to have to. I think that's probably the party line.
Yeah. Like, no, so this year in 2024 already, there's been like a handful of events, because obviously not every DP World Tour, Asian Tour event, PGA Tour event have open qualifying spots on, or open spots on the table. Only a few of them do. So I think there's only been like three or four, maybe five of them so far. But three of them have been won by Live players. Like Dean Mercer won one when he won in South Africa. Joaquin Niemann won when he won Australia, and now David Puig. So like no one doubts that these guys are good enough. No one doubts that Tyrrell Hatton's good, not good enough to play in the majors. Like of course he is. But like these three guys went out of their way to play in the events to qualify for the Open, and they did exactly that. I've a lot of respect for that. Everyone else on Live is complaining about it. Just needs to go and play in those events. Like, no one's stopping Taylor Gooch from playing in the US Open qualifier. You know,
Yeah.
go do it. I say I've got a lot of respect for everyone that does that. My own caveats that Nima needs to stop bitching about it.
I was just thinking there, I can't picture Tyrrell Hatton win the Masters. Like, I can't picture them getting a green jacket. I could see Neiman winning it, but I just can't, just Tyrrell holding the clubhouse trophy in a green jacket. Just I
But
don't,
have you seen that
so
photo of
weird.
Tyrrell Hatton winning the Arnold Palmer, and he has the red cardigan on? He looks
Yes.
like Paddington Bear. He looks terrible in it. Like it's an awful look. He looks terrible.
He's got a
Poor
weird
Tyrrell.
beard as well. Like, you know what I mean? It's kind of just all neck beard. Like, it's not great.
Yeah. This week is the Magical Kenya Open. Roy McIlroy is not in the field in your desperate bid for him, Michael, to become the Open champion or the Opens champion.
Yeah, has he's not he's he's not playing the Mexico one either, is he?
No, not at all.
So I was just kind of like, I was looking there. They're the ones he needs to win, because he's got the Scottish, the Canadian, the US, the Open, the Irish, the Australian, the Hong Kong, you know.
So we spoke about this a few times. So your theory on this is like Roy's never going to beat Tiger's or Jack's record when it comes to majors. Beating Tiger's 82 plus wins on the PGA Tour is going to be tough. So in terms of like making history, you think Rory should become or try to become the Open champion to win every national open that there is on the planet?
Yeah, so I've had, like, I've probably said this before. People might be interested. I've, the two big ones that he could win, that, like, there's not much big money in Kenya, but the Kenya Open and the Mexico Open are on this week, so he could easily win one of those. That's another ticked off. The other ones then are the South African Open, the Indian Open, the Italian Open, the Belgian, the Dutch, and the Danish. Right, so easily could bang off the Belgian and Italian one year on the DP World Tour if he wants to win the road. Like, you know, if he wants to make sure he wins the DP, the Order of Merit pay on the DP World Tour. Mexico won then his PGA, so he could throw three or four into them because he's got a good amount. I don't think there'd be many that even touches him.
I think we've looked into this before. Hasn't like Gary Player got like a load of those national opens?
He does, but they weren't. Yeah, he probably does actually. Yeah, because he was it. He is a lot. He I think he's got. He doesn't have the Kenyan one though. So there's actually, I was looking at this previous winners for the Kenya Open this week is pretty cool. Two winners is when they was on the Safari Tour, so it wasn't on, before it was on the DP World Tour. But Seve Ballesteros won it in 78, and then Chris O'Connor Jr. won it as well. So I love this event. Like I've been to Africa twice, so I just kind of I love the whole atmosphere and the vibe that goes on it. And couple of things I love about it is the color of the sand and the bunkers is quite dark. It's really kind of African muck, which I think just it looks really cool on camera. And Matagi Golf Club is there's a lot of water on it, so a lot of people kind of think that there because it's Africa there won't be a lot of water. There's a lot of water. And it just, I think it looks really cool on TV. And I'll be watching a lot. I'll be actually watching a lot of it because this year there's 13 Kenyan golfers in the tournament, which
That's a lot.
it's a lot. I mean, I'm not saying Kenya golf isn't, you know, it's not one of the big destination golf course, you know, golf places in the world. So I think it's really cool to have the 13 Kenyan in it. And then,
I remember, sorry, I'll just interrupt you there real quick. I
yeah.
remember last year there was one Kenyan guy who made the cut. I remember watching it on Friday when he had a big putt to make the cut. He makes the cut in the number, and like people were going ballistic, like members of like the government were there watching it, because obviously it's also like sponsored by the Kenyan government or like their tourism board. So like members of the government were there, and like everyone's going absolutely ballistic because he's made the weekend, and that was cool to watch. He was a young kid, like that was great to watch. So yeah, hopefully a bit more kind of local action going on this year.
Yeah, and like I know I was, you know, it's not a massive, huge event. We're gonna have loads of stars on it, but there's still some really good players are gonna be there from the DP World Tour. No massive big hitters, but lads that I think some lads have been going really well and playing really well. And then some guys you're looking at going, it would be a huge win for them. Like Dino Fratelli's there, yeah, friend of the pod, John Catlin is gonna be there. Eddie Pepperell's gonna be there. Like a win for Eddie Pepperell, you know, it will be huge for him. Marcus Armitage is there. So like there's definitely some really good golfers gonna be there. And it's just I think it's I love it as I've always said, it beats a random bank in the middle of America that I don't really know anything about. I like money aside. And I guess I know it's a big thing, but I'd rather be the Kenyan Open champion than the, you know, the insert bank or insurance thing in the middle of Phoenix, whatever. I just think it's a cooler thing to be in. There's also a very cool jacket you get when you win. You get a red kind of Kenya jacket with the kind of stuff, which is really cool. And like being in Africa, people are so proud of their country. So like they're gonna take. When you'll see it, they take so much pride in showing off their golf course and the fact that it's in Kenya.
The trophy is cool as well. It's a big rhino on a big wooden slab. Like it's a cool trophy. Right, that'll bring us into our bet of the week segment. So this is the final segment of the podcast where Michael and I place a 5 euro bet on each of the DP World Tour's action every week. Not a crazy amount of money, I know, but we're just doing this for a bit of fun. We're basically doing this for bragging rights. Both of us had a pretty poor week. You had JT to top 10, top 20. That did not land. I had Jordan to top 10. That due to disqualification, that did not land. So as it stands at the moment, Michael, you're up 60 quid overall, which is actually still really good.
Yeah, I'm actually really, I'm absolutely really impressed with that, to be honest.
You are. I am after a tough like 3 week stretch, actually yes, 4 week stretch now at this point, I'm now only up €7.50. So it's tough scenes for Johnny, but
I think the speed thing
good
killed you
luck.
because I think he was. What did you have speed at?
Oh, like if it was, I would have made like 20 quid or something like that off the
Yeah.
back of it.
Yeah, I
I
think
would have.
that would have made a big, especially because Justin Thomas let me down. So.
Yeah, it would have closed the gap a good bit, but instead now we're both just same gap, just my numbers look a little bit worse than yours, look a lot worse than yours. This week we're going with the Magical Kenya Open, and this week is a personal pick for me, right? We do have an Irishman in the field, with the sole Irishman, as Conor Purcell. Connor, we've had him on the podcast a couple of times. He's the real deal. He's obviously currently playing on the Challenge Tour, but he's played a number of DP World Tour events already, including last year in December 2022. He finished second at the Australian Open. He went over for his brother's wedding, right? Brought his clubs over. We thought we'll turn it into a little bit of a jolly. Oh my God, there's a DP World Tour event. He got an invite into the event. No, sorry, he Monday qualifies into the event.
Sick.
Monday qualifies into the event and then finishes T2, which was just like a seriously, seriously nice little paycheck for him.
Could you imagine the piss of at that wedding? He's over for his brother's wedding. You know, if he had won that after Monday qualifying, like that would have been a, you wouldn't have seen, they would have drunk the bar dry that Irish
way. So a few weeks ago, he played again in Australia on the DP World Tour, and he and Mark Power both played in like with the final group, or one of the final groups alongside Cam Smith. So like he's used to the big stage. This isn't the strongest field either. Like I know there's obviously a couple of good players in there, but it realistically isn't the strongest field in the DP World Tour. He's just off a T17 in South Africa on a challenge tour. I'm going to back him to finish tie for 20th at 9-2, potential returns of 2750. That now, if that lands, will eat into your lead a good bit because I have full faith in Connor.
Yeah, like I think it'd be really interesting to watch, see how he goes to that. I'll definitely be now thinking the beauty of this is I now watch whoever your pick is. I favorite them and I watch your picks as well. And be so I won't do what I normally do and hope that he doesn't play well so you don't win. I'll actually be backing him. I'm gonna go for kind of a bit of a favorite. Probably people might say I'm kind of chickening out of this one. I'm gonna go for Ewan Ferguson for a top 10 finish at 19-10. So it's a fiver on, returns of 14.50. Just think he played well the other week, and I think he's a guy I really like watching playing. So so no each way this, but I'm just gonna go straight in top 10. I reckon he could easily win it as well. He's been playing quite well, so
yeah. I backed you, and honestly, in Qatar to do well there, he did. He landed for me, so I was very happy with that. He's in good form. I like that. That's a good play. That's it then this week from the Bogeyman Golf Podcast. We have another podcast coming out this week with some of the guys from Callaway talking about the new Callaway drivers, new Callaway irons, woods, and the putters, obviously. So I spent the day with the team from Callaway talking through all their new gear. That podcast will be live on Thursday. And then in the next couple of weeks, we have one very, very exciting announcement, which I can't say too much about right now, but you're going to be seeing a lot more of our faces. It's going to be good. It's going to be very, very good. Until then, guys, thank you very much. Good luck, Michael, in the Magical Kenya Open. I hope you and Ferguson do as well, but not as well as Connor. will you watch any of Mexico?
I'll dip into it. I'm really looking forward to the Kenyan Open, so I'll watch more of that this week.
Thank you very much for listening. We will see you in the next episode.
On the tee, Jack Nicklaus.
This is the minute the millions around the world have waited for.
We will allow you to enjoy all of this. They are dancing in the pubs of Dublin. Harrington with an ace.
And we have a shining star at sunset. Rory continues his run to greatness.
The return to glory.